People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
You're invited to the Writing Excuses Cruise, an annual event for writers who want dedicated time to focus on honing their craft, connecting with their peers, and getting away from the grind of daily life. Join the full cast of Writing Excuses as we sail from Los Angeles aboard the Navigator of the Seas from September 19th through the 27th of 2024, with stops in Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan. The cruise offers seminars, exercises, and group sessions, an ideal blend of relaxation, learning, and writing, all while sailing the Mexican Riviera. For tickets and more information, visit writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Season 19, Episode 37. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on tension, movement, and resolution.
15 minutes long because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard. And I want to talk about music for a moment. Way back when I was studying music composition, one of my instructors talked about what he called the law of the half step, which was that when there's a note that is a half step off from being, you know, the tonic or the dominant or whatever, from being in resolution, you have a chord that has created tension, has created a need for movement. And the whole principle behind this was that as you are composing, you want to build chords where there are these half-step movements just waiting to happen. You don't want to move a whole step. You don't want to have a note jump, especially if you're writing for choir. You don't want to have somebody, you know, jump a third or a fourth or a fifth in order to resolve the chord. You want these little movements that make things resolve. And in teaching us about this, he said, now let's listen to some Wagner, because he was a cruel, cruel man. And what we learned in listening to Wagner is Wagner was always resolving in one direction while shifting something else out of place. And he knew what he was doing. And how does this tie into close reading tension with regard to Ring Shout? Well, there are lots and lots of places in Ring Shout where the tension depends on something that is just a little bit out of place. Something, it doesn't need to move far, but it needs to move. Like, it really needs to move. Mm-hmm. And the longer it doesn't move, the tenser we get.
One of the things that I love about this is it is a different way of describing something that I often use when I'm trying to create tension, which is the solution to whatever problem your character is dealing with creates a new problem.
Yeah.
One of the things that I specifically think about in Ring Shout is the butcher shop scene. She needs to find the butcher shop. She needs to go and confront this guy. And doing so unlocks, you know, it's like she does it. She has the confrontation. And that unlocks this whole other ginormous problem that the dream that she had had was not actually just a dream. I still have problems with that scene.
I mean, we see that again, you know, over and over he's doing that in terms of creating these moments that are the yes, but no and, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, things, even when things don't work out for them, it opens a door to further progressing the story. When things do work out for them, it works out in an unexpected way, right? And so, you know, I think the Night Doctors is another great example of that. When she goes into the tree, there's a particular name of the tree that I'm forgetting in the moment, but
Dead Angel Tree.
Yeah, the Dead Angel Tree. And sort of that whole sequence, which is this deeply unsettling thing, which is a solution to a problem, but it raises so many more questions in doing so, right?
What I love about both the girl from the dream and also the sort of brother's voice that come throughout is that it's one of those things where it's like every time we come back to it, it's moved a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there's a little bit of tension in that because you know that there's some revelation coming. There's no reason this would be recurring over and over again in the story and then be like, oh, well, and that happened. Like, it seems like it's building towards something. But in between, there's all these immediate, like, present tensions. Like, I got to go into this butcher shop. I have to, like, you know, run into a place on fire. But then it'll be like, oh, this little voice. And the voice is saying something a little different. Or, oh, this little girl. But she looks a little different. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, you know, those movies where something small on a shelf moves out of the corner of your eye. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, that's moved such a long way.
Yeah.
And that is a great way to build tension in this story.
To return to the musical metaphor, it's that scale is building in the background, right? It's each note is progressing up the scale. And at some point we know that's going to resolve. We know that's going to have to go somewhere.
And coming back to the music again and the law of the half step, when you have a repeated theme in music, but something is changing, the accompaniment has changed, the tempo has changed. We've all heard it done when, you know, you play a familiar melody in a minor key. One of my favorite examples of that was Katrina and the Waves. Played in a minor key as part of a tribute during a Hurricane Katrina fundraiser. And it was, you know, emotionally super powerful, but you make little changes and it tells the reader, it tells the listener, we're going somewhere. We're not just waiting for this piece to end. There is a resolution coming. And the modification of the thing that you're familiar with is leading toward that resolution.
And this is one of the things that P.J. Clark does that I see early career writers not get, where they have a character who has a secret, who has some past traumatic event, and then they play coy with the reader. And the reason that it doesn't work is when it's handled badly is that there isn't that movement. There isn't that giving us new information. There isn't anything to be gained by the withholding. And in this, it is the withholding and then the resolution of that, you know, when she finally goes and has to relive that memory fully. That is a major plot point. It is one of the things that the story is building towards. And As we are going through it, there are these tiny movements. We get these small resolutions every time we come back to it with the things that Aaron was talking about with those. Every time we come back to the voice, it's a little bit different. It is these small resolutions that then open up a different question.
There's a common trope in all kinds of fiction where there is a secret and someone asks about the secret. And the answer is, you don't want to know the answer. Oh, you're not ready for me to tell you that yet. And it's often so ham-fisted that we just think of it as a trope and we hate it. But in Ring Shout, there are secrets that she is not ready for the answer to.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about the butcher shop in particular, and we get an answer, and the answer is a reveal where there is a whole scary, horrible mess that you were just not ready to know about earlier.
Yeah, to modernize the metaphor a little bit from Wagner, sorry. But, you know, if you think about it in terms of like an EDM beat drop, right? Like you're building this slow thing and then the beat drops and now you're in a different rhythm and things are going faster. What you want is that sense of release when you get there. When you get to that beat drop, things should be popping off, being a little chaotic. And then you'll find a different rhythm. You'll find a different pace as you settle in past that moment. But the butcher shop is such a good example of that because it's a thrilling scene, mm-hmm. right? It is, you know, the things that are happening in it are like absolutely buck wild, you know, even compared to the kind of horror we'd seen up until that point, this is reaching a different crescendo of that, right? Which is part of what makes that sequence so memorable and is going to set the pace and tone for the back half of the story.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we want to talk about moving toward that resolution.
Hi, I'm Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of Lovesack and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Imagine learning from the best without the years of struggle. On my podcast, I sit down with stars like Montel Jordan and Sarah Blakely to share the hard-earned lessons that can save you time and effort on your path to success. Ready to speed up your success story? Listen to Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson wherever you get your podcasts.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
The movie Clueless is great. I'll just say it. So my recommendation is watch the movie Clueless, the 90s Valley Girl retelling of the Jane Austen book Emma. It's got classic lines. It's got amazing actors. It's got Paul Rudd at whatever age he was claiming to be at that moment. But the thing that I really love paying attention to is the way they take something from a completely different era, the Regency era, and move it into 90s Valley Girl voice. If you're thinking about voice in your own work, think about how did they do that? How did they make it seem like Clueless is a movie of the time and place that it's from, while still keeping the plot and all of the things that come with being a retelling of an Austen classic? And one thing I like to think about that you may do as you watch this week is, how would you make that same story happen in the world that you're building? Enjoy that while you watch Clueless.
So you might have in front of you an outline for your work in progress where you've got a pretty clear picture of where things are going. Many of us will look at you and laugh a little bit because your characters have not yet run away with the story. And others of us will look at you very jealously and say, wow, I wish my outlines worked that way. The thing to remember is that this is your plan. You have an idea of how to move and how to resolve. The reader isn't in on it. And part of what makes Ring Shout for me so satisfying is that at every stage, I could tell that we were moving toward a resolution. I knew that, but I had no idea what it was. How do you set about creating that for your readers?
I would say that one of the things that I loved, you know, that I was talking about before with Ring Shout is the mini drops, the small answers that let you know that questions will be answered. And so looking at the sort of dream figure of the little girl, it's a little girl. Who is this? You know, who is this girl? Wait, this girl is me. Wait, this girl wasn't a girl. And there's a barn. Like, there's all these pieces of information come out. Like, we don't learn about the barn really until about three or four. And then once you hear about it, like, you know, you may or may not contextually put together your own beliefs about what the barn is. It was exactly what I thought it was.
Yeah.
But you know what? But it's each thing tells you, okay, this small question was answered. And so I know the next question will be answered. And that leads you towards the overall resolution of why is this important? And each single bit of information also tells you a little bit more. The reason that the girl is a girl in her mind's eye, even though when the event happened, she wasn't young, is because it's easier for her. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, that gives me both an emotional resolution and some more information about what's happening here. And I think it is those smaller bits that really help to give the reader confidence that you are driving towards something.
And it's also that more than one thread is active at any given time, more than one story thread, more than one piece of tension active at any given time. And each scene is moving those, like, you know, it's so good. I'm thinking about there's the girl, but also the Ring Shout scene. That in that scene, you're learning about how Ring Shout works. You're also hearing about violence that has been happening other places. You are learning about how the Ku Kluxes work, and all of those things move just a little bit, and then the weather begins to shift, and each time it's like it's all of these little tiny half steps that resolve something while shifting something else out of alignment. It's something that you can do with your own work, is to look at scenes and see, do you have only one thread that you're moving and resolving tension for in a given scene? And that's for short fiction or long form.
It's the way overlapping sounds and overlapping rhythms and melodies create greater amplitude, right? They're not countering each other out. I mean, you want to make sure they're not canceling each other out, which is a thing that can happen. So if you have different kinds of tension that are running counter to each other, this can cause a drop in excitement and tension in the book. But if you're doing what he's doing here, which is adding all these different layers of, here's the most visceral, immediate layer of, like, they're fighting Ku Kluxes in the street after trying to blow them up with this trap. to the memories, every time she draws her sword, mm-hmm. we know we're going to get another beat on that particular layer. And then the ring shouts, the sort of epistolary pieces that start off each section, each of those is adding another note to this sort of stack of melodies that we're getting that is building over the course of the book. And, you know, it makes the whole book feel like one of its own ring shouts, right? It's one of these own stories that has this impact and potential and is saying something very specific and powerful.
I also love that sometimes it's building and creating motion even when you don't think it is. Mm-hmm. So, for example, all the people, the voices, the images basically that she's getting when she draws the sword happen basically the same way every time that we see them the first few times. So it feels like this is just a thing. When you draw your sword, you get some random, pretty tragic things that mm-hmm. happened. But then those voices coming to play at the end of the novella, you know, spoiler alert, but you were supposed to read the book. Like those all coming to play feels like such a great, like a resolution I wasn't even expecting.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes that is also something that we could do, which is to resolve a thing that you didn't know needed resolution, but it feels so emotionally satisfying to get it.
It's, you keep us moving so much that we forget that, oh, her best friend died, which means that she could be one of the spirits in the sword now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that moment when she comes is such a resolution to that whole arc, the arc of friendship, the arc of the tragedy of her death, and the arc of the sword, all coming together in a single moment that leads to such a big emotional catharsis for these two characters in this relationship.
One of the things that makes this kind of movement and resolution satisfying is when it is always story-driven rather than driven by the necessity of the meta, the beat chart. Mm-hmm. You know, I want the reader to not know this yet. I want the reader to now I want them to know this. Okay, that's fine. You know, having a beat chart at the beginning that says, you know, the reader is in the dark about a whole bunch of things, and this is my list of reveals. But every one of those reveals not only needs to be justified, but the reader needs to feel like there was a really good reason why nobody in whose POV I was had that information until just now. And one of my favorite parts of the book is the realization that the trope of, oh, I have this sword because I am the chosen one of these women who gave me the sword. And then after the butcher shop scene, you're like, wait a minute. I'm not their chosen one. I'm someone else's chosen one. Mm-hmm. And that's the point at which for me, I no longer knew, I had no clue where this was going to resolve. I was now genuinely frightened because there, and we had this discussion years ago on the podcast, there's so many worse things that can happen to mm-hmm. a character than death.
Yeah.
Having them make the decision that you as the reader hate is so much worse. And I was afraid of that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the relationship between writer and reader. You were talking about the meta beat. And I think that one of the things, a life thing that I have been thinking about recently is the difference between have to and get to.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to reframe things that you have to do in your life as like, I get to do that. It doesn't always work. But,
no, you know, I've been trying that
feel
too.
Feel free to try it at home. But I do think that like sometimes it's instead of it's I have to hold this back from the reader. It's at this point I get to reveal this amazing thing to the reader and I'm going to build to that amazing moment of reveal. And so I think it's about like wanting to share your story versus wanting to hold back your story.
This came up in one of my D&D games in a conversation with one of my players. And we settled on this thing of the difference between holding a secret from you versus holding a secret for you.
Oh, that's
and,
great.
You know, so if you think of yourself as the writer holding the secret for your audience, you're it's going to be more exciting, more fun, better resolution if they don't know this thing yet versus like, I'm keeping this thing from you and you don't get to have it, right? And I think that subtle shift in the mindset, it's as delicate as the get to want to or get to have to, whatever it was. It's as subtle as that distinction, but I think it's a really important one and one that can be really helpful in getting to the most exciting kind of release at the end of a movement.
And I think that also gets to something that I often wind up telling writers, which is like, okay, so what emotion do you want the reader to have? Because gosh, that writer is clever, is not sustainable. And that is the, I am holding the secret from you.
Yeah.
The, oh no, is I am holding the secret for you.
Exactly.
The, yeah, my goal as a writer
is here, you know, like, mm-hmm.
My goal as a writer, as an early writer was, I would like to be seen as clever. And now I've reached the point where my goal is I want to be cursed by people who didn't want to feel the thing that I just made them feel.
Mm-hmm.
That's, for me, that's the high bar. Do I curse P. Jelly Clark?
Maybe I do.
A little.
Yeah,
no. maybe a little, but I enjoyed that ride quite. I enjoyed that ride quite a bit.
I appreciated that ride. I'm not going to say that this was an enjoyable ride.
Hey, we've got one or two more episodes to talk about this. Two more. All right. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. And in the musical vein, I have a fun homework for you. Write a scene three times. Same scene and write it from scratch three times, but listen to different music each time. And if you need help varying things, try all instrumental, try something that's got lots and lots of vocals, try something that you are completely unfamiliar with, that you've never listened to before. And see how that changes what you put down on the page.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.